to the Why We Build podcast. Join Steve Wheeler and our host, Greg Wallen, to explore the world of remodeling. Whether you're on the production team, design team, or managing the whole show, you can expect insights, tips, and stories that inspire and educate. So let's dive into the Why We Build podcast. On today's show, David Hercules, founder of Hercules Design Build in St. Louis, Missouri.
Welcome to another episode of the Why We Build podcast. I'm Greg Wallach here with Steve Wheeler. Today, we're digging into one of the most critical yet often overlooked aspects of any successful design build project. That's the pre-construction process. Whether you're building a home, remodeling a space, or embarking on a construction journey, there's one thing that can make or break the entire experience. That's preparation. A solid pre-construction process ensures everyone involved, clients, architects, builders, subcontractors, we're all on the same page before the first hammer hits a nail. It's about more than just plans and permits. It's about laying the groundwork for clear communication, setting expectations, and anticipating potential roadblocks. The goal? Minimize surprises and avoid costly mistakes during the actual build. Because let's be honest, nobody likes a last minute, oh no. Those are the moments that throw the project off track. Now, in today's conversation, we're going to explore the concept of the big all hands meeting, or BAM, created by our guest as the solution to the frustrations and inefficiencies that can crop up when key details are missed early on. We'll learn how taking the time to get everyone together, hashing out every detail, and clarifying roles and responsibilities can transform the way a project is executed. This is all about turning complexity into clarity, saving time, money, and ensuring a construction process that's smooth from the start to the finish. So Steve, please introduce our guest.
I'm excited to welcome David Hercules to the show today. David holds a Bachelor of Interior Architecture degree from Kansas State University, where he was awarded the Paxton Award for Outstanding Design, given to one person in each graduating class. After graduating, he founded Hercules Designs, a custom furniture and cabinetry company that was based in South St. Louis City, which he operated with his wife for 3.5 years before taking a position with Kiko Abato and Company, a design firm in St. Louis. After a 10-year detour into the world of financial services, David returned to his love of design and building. Hercules Design Build was founded in 2007 as a one-man operation, with David doing handyman work, and quickly grew to encompass larger design build remodeling projects. As of 2024, Hercules Design Build is at 15 employees and over $3 million in annual revenue. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you.
David, how are you? How is St. Louis?
Great. And weather is awesome currently. And it's all good.
Well, let's jump right in here. Can you give us a little background, the story of how you founded Hercules Design Build and some of the early challenges you may have faced?
Oh, boy. As Steve just mentioned, I started basically by myself. My financial services business kind of wound down abruptly, and I was at a crossroads. And having grown up working with my father on remodeling our house pretty much all the time, and having tools, my default was, I can always make a living with my hands. So I my wife actually sent an email out to everybody she knew, and I immediately had 3 months worth of work. And that's kind of how it started, doing small handyman projects. But I think the biggest thing is I never said no when people would ask me, oh, can you do X? And it never really mattered if I'd done it before. I just said yes. And then if I had to go read a book or find a website, I'd figure out how to make it happen. And that was really a key component of how it grew from that to where we are now, doing much larger projects.
So how has the business evolved? I mean, you obviously just said the handyman projects, the kind of starter stuff. Like, where are you doing now? What kind of projects are your mainstay?
Now we're a full design build company. Even though my degree is interior architecture, I'm not really in the day-to-day design anymore. I've got a licensed architect on staff and a whole team of designers and then a team of carpenters. Our bread and butter are, mid-size interior renovations, small additions. We'll do, a bathroom gut remodel is about the smallest we'll do now, and up to, $1 million plus full home renovations with, large additions and that sort of thing. Our average project currently is about probably 250,000, I think. So the projects over the years have certainly grown in size and complexity. And again, it all starts with just saying yes, and then figuring out how to make it happen. along the way. And as far as the evolution of the company, you know, I was a solo operator for a couple years, would hire a guy to help, and then things would get slow and let him go. But really a turning point came, I guess, maybe 7 or 8 years ago when I got my hands on a book called How to Master the Art of Remodeling, written by Linda Case and Victoria Downing. And that reading that book, we were at probably 400,000 or 500,000 in revenue. And it really opened my eyes into how to make this operate like a real business. And that led me into the world of Remodelers Advantage, which ultimately led me to a phone call with Steve Wheeler and really put me on a whole different trajectory, to be honest with you. And I know we're not here to necessarily talk about that, but I do want to throw that in there because it is a super important part of the story about how we got to where we are now.
That's great, David. We love to hear those stories from our members, especially when they're successful. It's good for all of us. But let's talk about this big all hands meeting. We cleaned it up for the airwaves here, but walk us through how that idea came to be and what were some of the problems you were looking to address when that all happened.
Sure. And I can't tell the story properly without using the PG version and not the G version.
You can use PG.
You know, as we were growing and projects were getting larger and more complex and we're adding more people into the mix, you start to realize that, you know, every detail of a project needs to be owned by somebody. And when you're small, it's you, you know, it was me. And when I knew all the aspects of the project, I could pretty much keep track of it in my head, writing things down in a minimal fashion. But you grow to the point where now there's other people involved and communication starts to become more and more important. And it's sort of a gradual process as you grow. And what started to happen was things would slip through the cracks. And I know people listening, everybody in this business has been through this, where all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, the windows have to go in. And did we order the windows? or the windows are there. And it's like, well, it's 2 inches too big. Did we verify the size of the windows? And a subcontractor shows up and it's like, well, our scope to the client says we're doing this, but it didn't make it to the subs, you know, request for a bid. So now we promised we're doing this. And now we have an extra $1,500 of cost that we have to eat because we didn't communicate that properly to the subcontractor on the front end and get, you know, those kind of things. So as a chain of those kind of things kind of happened 4 or 5 years ago. And finally in the office one day, I heard about another thing that kind of got missed. And I was like, you know what? That's it. We need to just have a big ass meeting with everybody in it. So we go through all these details, get it all out on the table so we don't have these stupid mistakes anymore. That was the birth of the BAM, the big ass meeting. Now, of course, big all hands meeting is a little more, a little cleaner for clients and whatnot, but honestly, it's the BAM. And so we committed ourselves to a process of making sure that everybody was at the table and everything was out on the table so we could go through all the details of a project together as a team. And it was really just came out of that moment of frustration, and it's evolved a bit, but it is a critical piece of the process for us.
So as that process has evolved over time, what are the key things on there? What's something that you're never going to let slip by ever again?
Well, a big one, you know, as we've grown, we've grown by adding more subcontracting into the mix. You know, early on we self-performed. Well, when it was just me, I was self-performing everything. And then you start with like MEP trades, and then we've branched out. So as the number of trade partners or subcontractors, however you call it, has gotten more, that piece has become a more critical component. In a large project like an addition, you know, we'll have 20, 24 different subcontractors, and making sure that each one of their scope is complete in what we're expecting them to do, and that they have priced it. So their quote to us, their estimate to us, has all the stuff on it that's on our scope. Because believe it or not, sometimes a sub will miss something on plans, right? And so our written scopes have had to get more thorough, And then we have to take the time to match them up. And the estimator does a great job of that, but getting everybody's eyes on those scopes is important. The designer reads through them, compares it to what we have in the scope of the project. The estimator reviews it. So that's an example of a place where stuff can get missed really easily. You know, the plumber didn't realize they were going to have to do X, you know, and so it's not in their bid. Well, you get on the ground and it's like, well, it has to happen. Going back to the client and saying, well, you know, we didn't notice that the sub forgot to put this in his bid, or that the sub missed it on the plans, or we didn't label it correctly on the plans, or, you know, those kinds of things. Someone's eating it, and it's usually us. So,
thing I always would leave out is the doorbell. That was something I missed almost every single time on projects.
Well, fortunately, it's a little one, you know, but yes, it's right. So that's one example of details that can get caught in this kind of a process.
So what are you doing when you're finding something that has been dropped and you said someone has to eat it, but for the next time, how is that feedback loop being closed?
Well, so that's what the BAM is designed to handle. So what happens now is prior to the final contract, prior to the client getting the final numbers, we have the BAM. And it's important that we have a complete scope of work written, that we have, I'd say the drawing set is at least got to be 98% done. There might be a few red lines still to pick up, but it's pretty much all there. We've had our trade walks and our trade partners have gotten us all their hard number bids. We've gotten quotes on all the materials. Everything is selected down to the doorbell, every doorknob, every light fixture. We don't go to contract unless it's all picked. And that can be hard sometimes, but it's just a matter of insisting on it. You know, there might be one light fixture or something, but it's all got to be there. The, you know, takeoffs for materials that we're purchasing, and then hours. All the internal labor hours. We have our own carpenters, so we're doing a lot of framing and pretty much most, if not all, the trim work. So all those hours, and then demo hours, everything's got to be in there. And then an important thing is the advance prep. We don't all just show up and sit down and go through it together. Different people have responsibility for reviewing certain pieces of it prior to the meeting. And that's important also, because otherwise you're all sitting there all day, like reading the plans and whatnot. Each participant has prep work, and we have this all kind of lined out in an agenda. That advanced prep saves a lot of time in the meeting, and then in the meeting when everyone's talking back and forth, different people will catch different things, and that's where that synergy starts to happen.
So David, so you had your one light bulb moment where you said, you know, out of frustration, we need a big ass meeting, let's go to, and then what? Like, you're telling us what the agenda is, but how did you develop everything that is involved, and how did you figure out who you were going to include in the big ass meeting?
Sure. That did evolve a little over time, but initially it was, we need everybody there. We were smaller then, but the lead carpenter, who at that time our leads kind of were managing the project, so it was one and the same. Now we have a dedicated project manager, but the lead carpenter has to be there, the project manager, the main designer, I'm there at every meeting, our production coordinator, anybody who's involved. And back then it was kind of pretty much everybody. Now, you know, the office manager doesn't participate, and we have multiple designers. So if they didn't work on the project, they're not going to be there, but it's got to be all those people. And so that's where it started, is we all just got together and set the plans down, and we kind of went through it together. And then it, as it evolved, it was like, well, we could save time here. We should be preparing ahead of time. So, you know, we started printing out all of the subcontractor bids and passing them around so everybody could review them. And, you know, it was a little bit of an iterative process to develop it to where it is now. But the key, I think, is just getting everybody to the table together with the project there to talk through what potential challenges might come up, to talk through, hey, you know, did we remember to requote the windows after the size changed? Did we remember to tell the plumber that we added a sump pump? Did we remember, you know, and when you kind of get multiple brains around the table, things start to flow and recollections start to get stimulated. And just that conversation is where we started. And that was That's the key thing, is just getting everybody there talking about all the details of the project and what might we be missing. You'd be amazed at the stuff that you catch that you thought were handled. And then it kind of started to evolve into what it is now, which is a bit more of a formal process. Does that answer your question, Steve?
It does. It does. Yeah. Perfect.
Can you give us some examples of some of the specific like pre-work different team members are expected to do before they come to that meeting?
Sure. So the project manager has to have been to the site, which usually now the project manager is there for the trade walk. So he wants to get on site early. The PM has to review the entire scope and the entire drawing set to make sure that number one, they match, and number two, the drawings have the information that he needs. And then if there's anything in the scope that he's got questions about, like how are we going to do this or whatever, he knows, he comes in ready to go. Our production coordinator, Megan, she checks through all the material and special order quotes, makes sure that if there's a question about lead times or availability, she's checked on that to make sure that, you know, some of these selections and, you know, might have been made 3 months prior. So we want to make sure that if there's going to be a lead time issue, we're out in front of it. Because as you know, some special order items can take a long time to get. So she makes sure that she's verified all those things. The designer, who's primarily responsible for the scope, has reviewed the scope and makes sure that all the language is the latest. We use a software. We happen to use JobThread. We used to use CoConstruct. So no matter what, you know, there's all different kinds of the, you know, software, but making sure that it's got the latest information in there for everybody. Our estimator, Josiah, he has pre-reviewed all the hours for in-house labor with the project manager. And Josiah is, he owns the meeting. So he will run the meeting. He's our estimator and project developer, you know, kind of bridges that space between design and production. He puts the packets together of information, which is really all of the sub bids and then any other quotes or things like that that he includes for everybody to review and makes them available a few days prior. The designer makes sure the drawing sets are printed. So the lead carpenter can come in a few days ahead of time, pick up a set of everything, drawings and whatnot, and review them on, you know, his own, not on his own time, but, you know, review all that stuff before the meeting. Ideally, and I think most of the time the lead carpenter has been to the site with the PM prior to the meeting. Ideally, that's the situation. At least reviewed all the photos of the site because we document everything about a site. And so, you know, if he can't get over there for whatever reason, he's reviewed the photos and understands kind of what is existing and that he's dealing with. So that's all the kind of prior work that everybody does before the meeting.
Tell us about the little ass meeting.
So,
How is that different from the big ass meeting?
yeah, that's a great question. So it started out as just a kind of a mini version for a mini project. But really what the LAM is, the little ass meeting, is sometimes as we go through the BAM, we realize that there are some larger unresolved issues that there needs to be maybe another sort of small meeting that happens prior to the contract going out, just to make sure that those things have gotten resolved sufficiently, and it doesn't merit another BAM with everybody. But we'll call it a LAM and we'll say, hey, you know, Josiah, you just will get with Jonathan prior to contract going out and review this piece of it once you get this revision or whatever. And we'll do a LAM in between. So it's just some of it's just kind of having fun with the idea and the terminology, you know. But that's really where the LAM came from.
So if you were starting now, you know, you're gonna be fresh in this business. What questions would you ask a veteran remodeler about pre-construction, about this type of information? Is there anything that you, when you started, you didn't know that you could have gotten from, you know, someone who's a veteran in the field or something like that?
Yeah, I would ask about, I guess I'm thinking of the answer before I'm thinking of the question here. But like, I guess a question I'm anticipating is, you know, is it worth it? Is it worth the investment of time? And time equals money. And I would say unequivocally, absolutely. And that's the thing. It's like it's a big commitment to pull everybody away from what they're doing and sit down for hours. Sometimes it's hours, and sometimes it's spread over 2 days. When you have all these people sitting there as a business owner, you know, like that's an expensive clock that's ticking for, you know, when you're paying everybody to be there. And so I guess my question would be, you know, is it really worth it to do all that on the front end, to spend all that on the front end? And I would say, absolutely, it's worth it. There is not a single BAM, no matter how thorough everybody tries to be, there's not a single BAM that doesn't bring up something, and usually some substantial things, whether it's, hey, we didn't count time for doing X because this is in the scope and we're going to have to do all this prep before the plumber gets there, so we don't have hours for that. Or you know, the electrician is missing, you know, roughing in for the generator they want to do down the road. Or, you know, there's always thousands of dollars of potential issues that get caught.
So, David, you just mentioned something. I was getting like a Tim Fowler voice in my head, that, you know, from early days of his podcast, we were talking about production meetings. And the one question he would always ask is, you mentioned expensive. You got a lot of, you know, expensive people in the room. When you first discover that you need to do a BAM, how do you pay for it?
That's a great question. Initially, it was, we paid for it out of saving money by not making the mistakes.
Okay.
And that's just to be honest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when we started doing this, you know, we just had to do it. It was like, yeah. we just want to quit making the mistakes. And it's not just the cost of the mistake, but it's the delays in a project. And we all know, even though it's hard to put a dollar figure on it, when your project is delayed, it costs.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to figure out how or why, but it just does. That was really initially how it was the idea that we're going to save money by investing this. Since then, we have some team members who bill all their time to projects, and others are salaried, and it's more built into, you know, just not to get too number crunchy about it, but built into indirect expenses, you know. So the designer, they're billing their time to the job, and we bill hourly. So we're actually getting paid for their time to be there. The PM is billing his time against the production side. So we're building PM time into the jobs. So a lot of it's now getting covered. Our estimator is salaried, and his time is already just spread out, you know, in the indirect expenses. So, but since we're on hourly billing now with design, our designers will bill those hours to the client. So we're getting paid for probably half of the hours directly, I guess you'd say, for the people being there.
Yep.
But that, then, again, that evolved over time.
Yeah.
And like, hey, you know.
Yeah. No. It's, and then it doesn't sound like it can be a standing meeting, because it has to be in correlation with a project starting. And I could be wrong. So my question is, how often, how do you schedule it? Because, you know, on top of the cost, it's getting into everybody's schedule, unless it is a standing meeting. How's that work?
It's definitely scheduled per project, and it is a big milestone step in our normal project flow. So every project, as it moves through design, you know, we have certain milestones, and the BAM is a big milestone that's part of that project timeline. So we will, you know, lay out in advance, because, you know, you have several projects going through, and we don't want to have is two BAMs in the same week. So we want to make sure that they don't overlap because of all the prep work, you know, trying to prep for two in a week is just too much. So that's one rule we have currently, is no more than one in any particular week. We know that because of the follow-up that is needed afterwards, you know, we want to be 2 to 4 weeks before we expect to have a construction agreement ready for the client, because there's always follow-up that has to happen after the BAM based on what we discover in the BAM. So it's just, it's part of our project timeline. It's not necessarily a standing meeting like every third Tuesday or whatever. But it is baked into our planning ahead for the project flows as they move through the process, if that makes sense. But it is kind of a big event. I mean,
No, it sounds it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just getting it into a rolling schedule of busy people seems to, you know, because we do that a lot where we have to get a bunch of people in a room together. So getting those schedules can be a challenge, but if it
You know, everybody's
it's
excited about it though. You know,
yeah,
that's the
that's
thing.
cool.
It's a big milestone, and it means that, hey, we're about to birth this one out into production, you know? And so it's kind of like there's an excitement around the band because it's like it's all the parts are coming together for this, you know, sometimes $1 million project, you know, and there's 2,000 little bits and pieces of it, and everybody's working on it. And so, you know, it is everybody takes it seriously, and everybody gets kind of amped up for it. You know, if we do it across the middle of the day, I'll buy lunch for everybody. So it becomes kind of an event, and it's a, you know, there's team building, just being kind of there with everybody together. It's kind of a fun part
That's
of the
awesome.
process.
Yeah, great morale boost too for that project. And last question. This is, you said this is pre-final contract signing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so how often will you have a BAM and not get the project?
Never.
Okay.
If we're going to a BAM, it's like, I mean, it's a done deal. We have not yet had one where we've gone through the BAM and then the client bailed out. I mean, at that point, we've already essentially
Yeah, you've got a
penciled in
lot.
a construction start, and they know within a couple of percent like where the number is. We may catch some things that move that number a little bit, so we don't tell them, you know, this is 100%, but you know, things are in alignment, numbers are in alignment. This is just one of those last big pieces to make sure we've got all the bases covered. And then, you know, everybody walks out of that meeting with their task list, and Josiah follows up to make sure he gets all, you know, everybody does their piece of it. That's the other important part is the action items for each participant and making sure that somebody owns following up on those, and it's in the hands of the estimator. So I want to make sure I get that part in. But no, we don't. By the time we get to the BAM, it's you know the client's already packing up the stuff, you know, to get started. So
So, David, before I turn it back to Steve for the hammer time segment, I'm going to ask you, can you give us one nugget, one bit of advice that you would give to a business owner or a production team, design team that's getting ready to really dig deep into the pre-construction or the BAM process?
I would say that it goes much, much quicker and smoother if people are prepared for the meeting ahead of time. And I would say probably the biggest thing is any field personnel that you're bringing in, make sure that they've had the time. And that means, you know, paying them to come in and sit down and go through the drawings thoroughly, go through the scope ahead of time. You know, they're used to swinging a hammer. They're out there moving their body and they're building stuff. So to sit down at a table for an hour and read a set of plans is not their natural inclination. So I would say make sure that everyone knows how important it is to come prepared so they're not flipping through looking at the drawings for the first time while they're sitting at the meeting. That wastes a lot of time. That would be probably a nugget that I would give people a heads up on. The pre-prep is important for everybody.
Excellent. Thank you, David.
It's Hammer Time with Steve Wheeler.
All right. So, David, first question, who would play you in a movie about your life and business?
I would say Harrison Ford.
Oh, that's fantastic. What is your favorite book, fiction or nonfiction?
How did I know you were going to ask this question? I have a lot of favorite books, but I would have to go back and say Developing the Leader Within You was monumental by John Maxwell. It's not one that's on a lot of people's radar anymore because it was probably written 30 years ago, but fantastic book.
Okay. What is the coolest thing you or your crew have found during a project demo?
The coolest thing that we have found. Wow. There's the you know, walls full of razor blades that we've all found. There's you know, a Coke can from 1965. There's the coolest thing, I think, stuffed in insulation, I found a bag of silver half dollars once.
Really?
That was pretty cool. We found a again, this is a PG thing, but we found a like a 1930s condom container in a wall. So,
Okay, we'll leave that there. I have questions, but we'll leave it there. If you could have lunch with any famous, or I'll say non-famous, builder or designer, who would that be?
Frank Gehry, architect.
Awesome. All right, last question here. What's the most rewarding part of your job?
The most rewarding part of my job as a business owner is when you have good people on your team and you can sit back and watch them do what they do, and you can see the care and the passion and the creativity that they're bringing to the table, and that they're really pouring themselves out in these projects. And as the person whose name is on the sign, and I sit back and watch these people that are in many ways way more talented and knowledgeable than I am, and you see that come together, it's super rewarding as a business owner. It's one of the coolest things in this kind of business, is just surrounding yourself with people that are better than you and watching them do their thing. It's just really cool to me.
Man. That is awesome. And a great conclusion to Hammer Time.
Awesome.
David, great sentiment. Loved hearing that. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing your proprietary BAM. We love it. I love that you're creative with the title. Probably something to do with the architecture background for sure. But thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for speaking so highly of RA as well.
Sure. Thank you, guys. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
So, Steve, what's the coolest thing you've ever found on a demo?
You know, I'm having one of those moments right now where I had a lead carpenter that found like these Civil War artifacts, but I don't think I was there. It's like one of those things, you've told the story so many times, you think maybe you're a part of it. But I found one time I found a bunch of old newspapers, like from the 50s, which were pretty awesome. You?
Newspapers intact. It was a job in Eastern Connecticut or Eastern New York. And they had like Jackie Robinson was on the sports page. It was so cool to see all that stuff.
One more thing, and then we'll get to the end of the show, you know, get to the show. But the excavating for my deck in my backyard, I don't know what type of backfill they were using, but there was just a ton of old glass, like old blown blue glass, a bunch of old medicine bottles from a bottle plant here in Wilmington, Delaware, that is far, you know, gone. But so I have like probably 12 of those old medicine bottles from excavation. So that was great.
Very cool. So David gave us some really great stuff. One of the things I was thinking about when we talked about how much does it cost, there's a really great book called Upstream by Chip Heath, Dan Heath, that group of folks there. And it even in the book, it says it's hard to put a value on this upstream thinking. And that's really what David's doing with this meeting, is this looking ahead as far as you can and getting that out of the way. And he also mentioned something about this, like schedule slippage. And, you know, we talk about gross profit per day, and it really is, it's a real thing. It's costing you something in almost any scenario.
Yeah. And I think what's important, and first of all, anytime that we see innovation here based on, you know, David could have probably kept going, and we see a lot of people that just keep going and thinking that, you know, bumping your head against the wall and making mistakes is a part of this job. Well, it's not. And he made sure that it wouldn't be for his company by putting in the BAM and the LAM. And so I love when innovation takes shape and they're like, we need something. And for him, it wasn't so much the cost up front. He knew it needed to be a part of his business and a part of his process. So he put it in and backfill the agenda and how you pay for it, who's involved. But I think it's just so important when people are like, you know what, I know there needs to be something here, and then we'll figure it out. But so yeah, the figuring out the cost thing. And I think he's gone from viewing it as, you know, a defensive not to make mistakes, and it has morphed into a much more offensive, let's just prepare to be great instead of let's prepare not to make mistakes. And so, you know, I'm big on the shifting of mindset, and, you know, it's a celebration at this point of, gearing up to go into a big game or go into a big project. So it's taken shape into really a big shifting culture booster for the company. On top of them, a byproduct, not making mistakes. So it's just phenomenal, the process and how it came about and how it's, I think the important thing is that it's changed over time and it's evolved and it's adapted to what it needs to be, but it's serves all the purposes it was developed for and then some, which you can't ask much more.
I think the high spot for me was when he said they're excited for it. They know it's
Yes.
kickoff, like you said, celebration. It means a lot. And I love when my teammates get excited about something new as well. So I think it's that's a perfect ending to that particular meeting. It's just getting ramped up to get into the next or into that project deeply. So, but that's it for now, man.
That is it. We want to
Let's
thank thank you to David Hercules for joining us today.
Absolutely, David, thank you so much, and we'll be back next time.
That's it for this episode of the Why We Build podcast. We hope you found something valuable to take back to your team. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Please send in your ideas for future episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one. If you want more information about our roundtables program, production manager groups, design manager groups, consulting services, or any of the Remodelers Advantage offerings, please visit remodelersadvantage.com or email Greg@remodelersadvantage.com.